The base has been infiltrated. The defenses have been dropped. Scrambling through the darkness, the mutant known as Beast has made it to the final room of the Inner Sanctum. Beast reaches a control panel and begins to download the encrypted files he seeks when the entire control room is flooded with red light. Standing defiantly in a silhouette, the Cobra Emperor Serpentor bellows at the intruder to his domain. You are a fool to have entered here! Your life is forfeit! I thought for a moment that we could live in this world together. You thought wrong, worm! And this battle commences. It's Blue Fur versus Gold Scales. It's Brilliant Scientist versus Scientific Experiment. It's Beast versus Serpentor today on Who Would Win?
And welcome to another episode of Who Would Win, a show that completely ignores anything important happening in the world and instead focuses on a fictional battle between two characters from the worlds of comics, sci-fi, and fantasy. I'm your host, James Gavsey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Ray Stecanus. Ray, I'm quite confident that today's matchup has never been suggested in the history of battles ever. So please tell the audience what possessed us to create today's matchup.
Well, you know, we go through a very long and deeply and upsettingly involved process to put these matchups together.
So true.
Yeah. And so we really do try to look for matchups that have never been done before. Sorry, Superman versus Goku and RoboCop versus Terminator fans. And you exist. I'm so sorry. My point is, we want unique matchups that people do not normally do that fit the mold of two characters that are not similar to each other, but have similar power level and come from two different places. And I think with this particular matchup, we have achieved what we are looking for.
You know, I got to tell you, I'm super familiar with Beast from the X-Men. Love that character. And, you know, I feel like you may have a slight advantage, Ray Stecanus, due to the fact that you do this other actually really amazing podcast known as Knowing is Half the Podcast. Would you like to explain to the audience and the fans of Who Would Win around the world, you know, how that podcast may actually give you a lot more familiarity with Serpentor?
Well, you know, I do a little show called Knowing is Half the Podcast with TV's Gina Ippolito and Robert Clark Chan, Superhuman. And we do talk about G.I. Joe and other 80s, 90s cartoons. This is the third time I've repped a G.I. Joe character on the show. That is not by coincidence. I am one for one so far, though, so I am not a perfect record. So maybe the familiarity does not help as much as I wished it would.
You know, I started to research Serpentor, and by research, that means I've watched a really unhealthy amount of YouTube videos, you know, for the old G.I. Joe, the iconic G.I. Joe series from the 80s. Time well spent, by the way. And I have never been more impressed by a character you have represented. And you've represented some amazing characters before. Sure. I'll reveal later during the show what happened during this iconic cartoon series that made me say, oh my God, that's who Beast has to take on. I'm confident in Beast, but you know, there's a lot of different, you know, factors going into a Serpentor, which I don't want to reveal yet. I'm sure you'll do a great job of that. You know, what makes you so confident with Serpentor, by the way?
I feel like I channel Serpentor on a show-by-show basis here on the Who Would Win show. I mean, if you really break it down, you know, he's got the DNA of all the great leaders of history. I basically am the same. He likes to shout a lot and really yell at people, and I'm known for both of those things right there. And the supreme confidence that Serpentor brings into every single action, I believe I also project as well. So I basically am Serpentor. Let's just leave it at that.
And you know, Serpentor has this, you know, catchphrase, which I'd love for you to say as Serpentor to our audience, because I think no one can do it as well as you could. Could you please, to the Who Would Win audience, channel Serpentor and pretend I'm one of your Cobra minions?
Serpentor will win this battle. This I command.
So I've actually used that line before at PTA meetings. Didn't go over as well as I thought.
You didn't really have the gravitas behind you that Serpentor does, obviously.
I did pick up someone and throw them against a wall. I thought that would kind of set the tonality I wanted for the meeting.
Weirdly enough, that's also a Serpentor go-to move. I may be talking about that later.
Oh, fantastic. All right. Well, you know, Serpentor is amazing. Beast is amazing. So when you have two amazing characters, obviously you need an amazing judge to come in here and give us their wisdom and really kind of settle this, you know, who's going to win this matchup once and for all. So coming back for a second time on the Who Would Win show, it's one of Los Angeles' premier pro wrestlers from Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. It's none other than Tyler Davidson. Tyler, thank you for coming back onto the show.
How's it going, guys? I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me back.
Well, Tyler, you know, you were a judge over one of the most hotly contested battles we've ever had, Supergirl versus Vegeta. And, you know, I think we've got another one of those types of matchups right now. So this is actually a big deal. But before we get into that, you know, with everything that's going on with the lockdown and the coronavirus and what have you, what's been going on with Championship Wrestling from Hollywood?
Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, you know, the show pretty quickly had to cease taping, but luckily with the announcement that sports can go back into effect with empty arenas starting in the first week of June, at least tentatively speaking, they're able to kind of get back up and running and get back to work. You know, luckily the show is nearing 500 episodes at the end of this year, and so there was plenty to reach into the archive and tide fans over until the return.
Very cool. Now, we mentioned this on your previous episode, but let's say it one more time. How do people within Los Angeles and then outside of Los Angeles explain how people can enjoy Championship Wrestling from Hollywood?
First and foremost, people can tune in to KDOC TV if they're in the Los Angeles area. I believe that's channel 56 on most major cable providers, Saturday afternoons at 4 p.m. Or they can also go to fight.tv, that's FITE.tv, to check out the backlog of episodes.
Very cool. With that being said, we talked about, you know, in the last episode too, what I feel would be the most amazing tag team of all time. That is the combination of obviously Ray Stekanis and James Gavsy. I'm just going to put you on the spot. I asked before too, but I want to see if there's been a change. Have you come up with a new name for what would obviously be the greatest tag team of all time?
A new name for the team of Ray Stekanis and James Gavsy?
Yes, sir.
I think you can't go wrong with a good mashup. So really just hashtag Rames, I think could be an efficient name.
Hashtag Rames.
I could see that on a t-shirt. Yeah, absolutely.
Hashtag Rames. I like it.
Get it trending.
It sounds like a horrible science experiment gone really right.
Exactly.
But if we took that name, would we be sued by Ving Rames? That would be the question.
Don't use the H. I think if you go maybe Raymes, I think you'll be good. Or maybe Raymez, you know, to really kind of edgify it.
Is this the 90s, like, though? Do we need the Z at the end?
We're bringing it back.
I wear the 90s, like the letter Z and shoulder pads on every comic book character I could think of.
Yeah, and the letter X was also very, very popular.
So with that said, it's about that time. Ray, please do us the honors and announce today's matchup.
Representing Marvel Comics, the mutant who's always feeling blue, Beast. And representing Hasbro, the Cobra Emperor, whose favorite Christmas carol is Deck the Halls, cause fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la, Serpentor.
Oh, the theme song from Cobra Law, if I'm not mistaken.
I heard a rumor.
All right. Now, before we go any further, let's go over the official rules of a Who Would Win match. Now, rule number one, each debater will be able to make 3 points. Rule number two, the Who Would Win match is a random encounter in a neutral location with neither combatant necessarily knowing anything about their opponent or having any time to prepare for it. Rule number three, the exact version of the character has to be specifically stated. Now, Ray, there actually are a few different versions of Serpentor here. Give us some clarification. Which version are you going with?
Look, if I'm ever going to have a choice with a G.I. Joe character, I'm going with the Sunbow version of the character. So I'm going with the animated cartoon version, who only appeared in season 2 of G.I. Joe Real American Hero and G.I. Joe the Movie. And I'm going to be using that version because he's the raddest.
All right, I think that's a good call on your part, now that I think about it. There are a lot of different versions of Beast, and Beast has appeared, you know, both in film, different versions of, you know, animated shows. I love Beast from, you know, the classic X-Men series from the 90s. A little bit of a surprise for you, Ray. I'm actually going to be going with Beast in the current 616 Marvel comic book universe.
I just had a heart attack. That was so shocking to me.
It is crazy. All right, rule number four. The winner of the Who Would Win debate is whomever the judge decides has the best ability to incapacitate their opponent to the degree where they can safely walk away with no further threat being present. This includes completely destroying their opponent, removing them from the field of battle, restraining them, or knocking them out. The Who Would Win battles are not necessarily death matches. Rule number five. The judge can disallow or veto a point made by one of the debaters if they feel it goes outside of the scope of the battle or is irrelevant to the fight. And rule number six. Each debater must use examples of powers, abilities, or weapons that are a part of the specific character's continuity, or at least was with that character for a good deal of time. And now let's get to the tale of the tape for both of our combatants. Today's tale of the tape is brought to you by the official Who Would Win merchandise store. Get your official Who Would Win t-shirts, mugs, and merchandise by going to whowouldwinshow.com, the website itself, and clicking on the merch section. By the way, please send us a pic of you with your official Who Would Win shirts or merchandise so that we can post it all of our social media accounts. Oh, by the way, Ray, we've got a secondary sponsor. This episode is also brought to you by the amazing Digital Sky podcast. Ray, we've been talking about this podcast for a while. I'm a huge fan. You've been listening to this podcast since it started back in January when they had their first episode being released. What are your thoughts on this before I kind of talk about how much I love it?
Look, Digital Sky is a great show. I've said this before. I put it on the record. And truthfully, I want to keep talking about Digital Sky on this show because eventually, if we talk about it enough, they might feel pressure to put both of us on the show and then everybody wins.
I love it. Of course, Digital Sky's, you know, it's a scripted anthology podcast. They have amazing voice talent actors that come in. It's written and directed by Scott Zacharin. Absolutely incredible. Listen to it whenever you can. You can actually subscribe now on Apple Podcast. And actually, one of my favorite places to go check it out is actually on YouTube. Check out Digital Sky's channel on YouTube to subscribe, like, and just binge listen to all their episodes. So with all that being said, Ray, please give us the details on Serpentor.
Serpentor is the genetically engineered Emperor of Cobra, the chief antagonist of G.I. Joe and ruthless terrorist organization. He was created by Hasbro and first appeared in the G.I. Joe episode Arise, Serpentor, Arise, Part 4 in 1986. When leadership of the ruthless terrorist organization Cobra was facing struggles, scientist Dr. Mindbender decided not to recruit a new leader, but to create one of his very own. Taking the DNA from infamous world leaders such as Genghis Khan, Napoleon Bonaparte, Attila the Hun, Vlad Tepes, and several more, Mindbender genetically engineered a super soldier who would become Cobra's new emperor. One who could combine superhuman physical abilities with the strategy and tactics of every great leader in history. That emperor is Serpentor. And fun fact, as revealed by G.I. Joe writer Buzz Dixon on a show called Knowing is Half the Podcast, the writers of Sunbow were asked to come up with a backstory to explain this new Cobra Emperor character and toy that Hasbro wanted to push. They came up with two very different stories to choose from. One story where the DNA from the great conquerors of history were used to create him, and another one where an ancient race of inhumans living underground pushed him forward to lead their reclaiming of the Earth from humanity through Cobra. To everyone's surprise, Hasbro just went and said, I don't know, do both. This is why season 2 of G.I. Joe starts with Arise, Serpentor, Arise. And then after that season, it was followed up with a retconned storyline to explain Serpentor's creation even further in G.I. Joe the movie. That is Serpentor.
You know, I've got a quick question for you, Ray. You know, of course, Cobra is a no good terrorist organization, or so everyone says. What would have happened? Because I always wondered, what would have happened if Cobra actually had taken over the world?
It's funny
would
you say that.
Would it have been that bad?
Yeah, because there's a two-part episode in actual animated G.I. Joe. I think it was called Worlds Without End, unless I'm mistaken. And it actually has a few members of the Joe team that they were trying to cycle out. And they were actually like, taken to a parallel universe where Cobra had taken over the world and they were actually dead and found their own bodies. It's a horrifying episode for kids. And they decide to stay there and fight Cobra. So the answer is we've seen what happens when Cobra takes over and it does not end well for anyone.
Really? I would have thought like we'd have better health care because they'd want to take care of us. We'd have better retirement. Maybe I'm just wrong. I don't know.
No, they do have better health care. Don't get me wrong, but yeah. It is also terrible.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's pros and cons with everything. Here are the details for Beast. Now, Beast, a.k.a. Hank McCoy, was created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby and first appeared in X-Men number one all the way back in September 1963. Now, a founding member of the X-Men, Beast was introduced as a mutant possessing ape-like superhuman physical strength and agility, oversized hands and feet, a genius-level intellect, and otherwise normal appearance and speech. Hank McCoy underwent progressive physiological transformations, permanently gaining animalistic physical characteristics. These included, of course, blue fur, both simian and feline facial features, pointed ears, fangs, and claws. Beast's physical strength and senses also increased to even greater superhuman levels. Despite Hank McCoy's inhuman appearance, he's depicted as a brilliant man in the arts and sciences. He's also known for his witty sense of humor and his use of barbed witticisms with long words and intellectual references to distract his foes. In other words, he's a very well-spoken smack talker while fighting. He is a world authority on biochemistry and genetics, the X-Men's medical doctor, and the science and mathematics instructor at the Xavier Institute. He's also a mutant political activist campaigning against society's bigotry and discrimination against mutants. And here's an interesting fact about Beast. Did you know that Beast was actually a big inspiration for at least part of Wolverine? It's true. Many people ask who had the iconic wing-tipped hairstyle first. Was it Wolverine or Beast? And it turns out it was Beast. Hank McCoy had that wild man type hairstyle in 1972, 2 years before Wolverine made his first appearance, and about 3 years before we saw Logan join the X-Men, and therefore copy Beast's hairstyle. Who knew that on top of everything, Beast was a fashion trendsetter? And now you have the facts on both opponents. Tyler, do you have any questions before we get started?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you guys will get into this, you know, as the fight, you know, wages on. I wanted to ask about Serpentor. Serpentor obviously has, you know, he has the instincts and the strategies of all of these great leaders. Do their like minds live inside of him? Is he constantly dealing with the memories and the mindsets of all of these different leaders kind of conflicting with one another?
Yeah, I would say that yes, to a certain degree, he does. There is an episode called My Favorite Things where he is actually trying to get personal possessions of all the different leaders that he's a part of, because being near belongings that were important to those people brings those characters to the surface of Serpentor and makes him feel even stronger and sort of more attuned, if it were. Now, he doesn't have like some sort of personality crisis going on inside of his head. All these kind of personalities work together. So we're not talking about some sort of crazy, you know, 13 different personality structure idea happening. But I will say, yeah, he does have some conflict inside of him, but often it resolves itself pretty quickly and he decides to just win and punch people.
Got it. Okay. Duly noted. Winning and punching.
Well, if we're ready, I'll go ahead and I'll do my point number one. Does that sound good?
That sounds like a plan. Ray, hit us with your point number one.
Point number one. I do want to talk about the DNA of Serpentor, because it is really crucial to who this character is. So I've said before in the intro, he's made from all the DNA of all the different great leaders. What exactly does that look like for people that have not seen G.I. Joe? The Cobra organization sent different teams to all the tombs and sarcophagus and burial sites of all of these famous leaders. So just a handful of them, because I didn't possibly get all of them, but I got a lot of them, is Napoleon Bonaparte, great military strategist, Julius Caesar, also a great military strategist, but also a great political mind, Hannibal, not Hannibal Burris, the comedian, to point out. This is Hannibal, who rode the elephants a long time
ago. Either one would have been a good call.
Either one, great, if he wanted to go that route. But he went with Hannibal, the great elephant rider, known for his audacity in battle and his aggression. He also has Attila the Hun, known for sort of his violence. Vlad Tepes, a.k.a. Dracula. He has the DNA of Dracula inside of him. Again, this is for cruelty as well as leadership. He also has Genghis Khan. You want to talk about one of the greatest military strategists in history, one of the greatest leaders of maybe one of the biggest empires of all time. You got Genghis Khan in there. Ivan the Terrible is in there. Eric the Red, the great Viking, is in there, as far as dealing with just sort of different elements goes. Montezuma, Rasputin. So he has a very underhanded side to him as well, because he's got the Rasputin thing. Also, he won't die, much like Rasputin wouldn't die, as well as Alexander the Great. And finally, and maybe most importantly, he has the DNA of one Sergeant Slaughter inside of him. Now, you may think to yourself, Sergeant Slaughter, the wrestler? No. Sergeant Slaughter, the character from G.I. Joe, who is a legit superhero in his own right. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in point number two. But what you need to realize is that coming out of the chamber, as it were, when he's born, when he's done, when he's microwaved, when the fork pops in, he is a prime human being. This guy is just muscles on top of muscles, but it's sort of that lean power muscles. It's not like an overstacked, I can't move kind of muscles. He comes out legit with no clothes on and just throws a bed sheet around himself. And in that moment, which you would see as a moment of ultimate weakness, he was just born. He's getting acclimated to his surroundings. He busts out with one of the greatest speeches that is so inspiring from nothing, that he's able to immediately have everyone in Cobra back him and go on his side. All he had to say is, he said a bunch of stuff, but then he ended it with, "Let those who fear me follow me. Let those who oppose me die." And everybody on Cobra looked at each other and they went, "Yo, yeah. This is our guy. This is the guy we want to lead us, not that Cobra Commander twerp." So what does that look like? One, he wins a fist fight right away against Sergeant Slaughter. But again, I'll get into that a little bit later. Performs a few strength feats and then rallies the troops, puts it all together, and conquers Washington, D.C. on like his second day of existing. He comes out of the womb and takes over Washington, D.C. to the point where he sits in the Lincoln statue with him sitting in that chair. He puts his own throne on top of it and just sits there basically saying, anybody who wants to come get me, and they can't, at least, you know, right away. They eventually find a way because otherwise it's a weird angle the TV show is taking. So what I would just say right here is very important for this combat. And why I bring all this up is because he is not going to lose a strategy battle. Beast is an absolute genius, no doubt. I would argue that if there's somebody who speaks more languages than Beast, if there's somebody who has a greater reference level and history and combat tactics more so than Beast, it would be Serpentor, because he can channel all of these personalities basically whenever he needs their strategy, whenever he needs their acumen. And he does so. This is why he is so wildly successful. So in a battle between these two, Beast is going to try to win cerebrally. I think that's a word. Yes. Beast is going to try to win with brains. And I think Serpentor 100% can match him with tactics. And that's my point number one.
Okay, this is why I'm worried. All right, I'm just going to go with this. This is why I'm worried. Because anyone who is born and then immediately throws on a bed sheet and still comes across like a boss and then takes out Sergeant Slaughter. Now, by the way, if this is Sergeant Slaughter the wrestler, that's still insanely impressive. But we're talking about possibly the greatest version of Sergeant Slaughter of all time.
It's hard to argue that
this is a purely, clearly like super powered level character that G.I. Joe, possibly the most powerful character G.I. amongst the G.I. Joe troops. But, you know, this actually reveals a possible weakness. So I went through the list and I watched again. I did my research and there was one set of DNA from one, you know, very important militaristic tactical genius that was not included, that they didn't get, right?
Correct.
And I believe that was Sun Tzu.
That is correct. Yeah, Sun Tzu's DNA was poisoned by Cobra Commander, so their first attempt at the creation was a monster, which was a lot of fun, but it did mean that they replaced Sun Tzu's DNA with Sergeant Slaughter's DNA, which you lose tactics, but you gain a lot of physicality.
Well, one thing that you're right. Now, by the way, I'm not really sure that was a bad substitution. Like, I mean, if you had to say, okay, we're missing some DNA here, whose, you know, cells are we putting in? If you put in Sergeant's, I mean, that's possibly an upgrade as far as I'm concerned.
As far as winging it goes, that's a great plan.
That's a great plan. But Cobra Commander mentioned something while he was standing off to the side, kind of scheming and saying, sure, let's see what happens. Yeah. Encouraging, you know, Serpentor to fight. He said, well, because he does. And one of the, it was either Dr. Mindbender or Destro. One of those three said, because he doesn't have, Serpentor doesn't have Sun Tzu's DNA. He is very, you know, he'll let his temper flare. What's the right word? He's very impetuous. He's very, you know, he won't be patient.
And he's quick to anger. That is 100% his one character flaw.
Okay. But unfortunately, I think that's the only flaw I can see right now. But I do think that's enough. I just wanted to establish that. It's not really a weakness. It may just be a slight little something that Beast can use. Okay.
I know you. You're going to try to. You're going to loop this around into something later. Don't pretend.
Quite possibly. All right. Now, let me get to my point number one, because I actually think that was a great point number one from Ray. Look, Beast is what you call an educated badass. And there's a reason why Hank McCoy is called Beast. His powers and abilities enable him to like match up well against almost anybody he faces. Why? Because when you combine his powers, they actually produce like this really cool synergistic effect. Like think of Spider-Man. He can use his speed, his agility, his super strength in a really cool combined way that enables him to fight way above his weight class. That's something Beast can do as well. So let's go over his superpowers. So first of all, he's super strong. Right now, Beast is listed as being able to lift about 10 tons. That enables him to like smash through a brick wall with a single punch, toss a small car, and to tie, like he actually took an iron barbell and tied it into a knot. His strength also goes into the muscles of his legs, obviously. And this allows him to leap a height of like, I think it's 32 feet. And he can do a standing broad jump of 50 feet, right? He's got superhuman speed, which is crazy because he weighs over 400 pounds. And Beast actually can run at speeds. I think he can go as fast as 40 miles per hour, which I do believe is slower than Spider-Man, but is still considered superhuman. He's also got superhuman stamina, and his musculature evidently produces less fatigue toxins. That's something like Marvel Comics uses as a, hey, he's got stamina. There's no fatigue toxins going through his body or whatever. But he is able to exert himself at peak capacity for several hours before tiring. He's got superhuman durability. This one's weird because Beast can withstand super powerful like punches and physical impacts. Like he jumps off a building from several stories and lands on his feet and he's absolutely fine, just walks away. He's able also to tank punches from opponents like Colossus. He tank punches from the Juggernaut and tank punches from the Hulk. Now, he wasn't feeling 100%, but he did get up and continue to fight after he took those hits. He's also obviously got superhuman agility and reflexes. He's also got a really cool healing factor where he recovers from injuries within the span of a few minutes. He's not Wolverine quick from recovering, but it's like a few panels of a comic book and he's good to go. He's also got resistance to chemicals, poisons, and tranquilizers because I don't put it past Serpentor to use those kind of tactics. For whatever reason, he's got telepathic resistance because why not? But here's what's something really cool. He's got razor sharp claws and fangs that can retract. They're super strong. They can rip metal apart, break apart stone, and it allows him to climb up stuff too. It's really, really cool. And by the way, this doesn't even include his genius level intellect, which some also consider superhuman. So, you know, he's got this crazy array of superpowers and abilities. This is going to be really hard for Serpentor to go up against because of someone who can do all this cool stuff. That's my point number one.
There's a lot of good stuff that you said right there. I think you just towed the line of credibility with a lot of the Beast stuff. I don't know if I've ever heard him jumping. Would you say, was it 36 feet in the air? That's a little higher than I heard when I was doing my research. I'll go ahead and let that happen because that's fine. 36 feet is good, but you know, I think I can do better. Well,
thanks for allowing that. I really appreciate you allowing my points to stand.
I allow it. That's, you know what? I feel good. I'm having a good day. I'm going to allow that one. Well, one thing that I will say, though, is Beast isn't necessarily somebody who, what we would say, takes it up to 11 in every single fight, right? Because he's battling sort of a darkness inside himself, unless I'm mistaken. And he's afraid necessarily, not afraid of hurting people, but he really doesn't want to hurt people for political reasons as well as personal and emotional ones. Am I incorrect in that?
You know, it's actually a good observation. There's often been times where Beast has been written as someone who sometimes wants to just go animalistic on someone, but his intellect says, hey, don't, because if you do, not only could someone get hurt more than you want because you lose control, but also, again, politically, you know, he's also this crusader for mutant rights. And the last thing he wants is for someone to say, see, that's what a mutant does to someone. You know, so he, you're absolutely correct. He does straddle that line. However, I may have something to go to that, but you're not wrong.
Sure. So I just wanted my big counterpoint to what you said, because his physicality is impressive. He's big. He's bigger than Serpentor, at least, you know, size-wise. He's probably faster and has a little bit better agility, or maybe a lot better agility than Serpentor. And strength-wise, I'd say he's maybe a little bit stronger. I think Serpentor can hang with him in the strength category, but definitely Beast has got a lot of physical things going for him. 100% without question, but he generally is a character who will hold back a little bit, and Serpentor is not. And I think that is very important to bring into that discussion.
The one thing that worries me, Ray, and again, I like to kind of be very straightforward with these battles sometimes, is the fact that although Beast has a lot of great experience and cool things and, you know, great feats, which again, I'll mention later, the one thing he doesn't have is a clear victory over Sergeant Slaughter. So I, you know, that's the, yep. All puns, you know, excuse that. That's the X factor right there. So You know, Tyler, what do you think of point number one? Any thoughts so far in the battle?
I mean, this is it's a very, very tough battle to judge. I was much more familiar with Beast than I was with Serpentor going into this. And I think the fact that it's two genius intellects waging war with each other, I think makes it very, very interesting. As far as point number one versus point number one, currently right now, I think I have to give the edge to Beast just because of all of those superhuman factors that you mentioned. I think that Serpentor, even though he's got the genius intellect and the strategies of all of these great minds, as well as the killer instinct that Ray mentioned, I feel like Beast having these superhuman capabilities in addition to that genius intellect gives him a slight edge just as far as where we're standing right now.
I love it. Okay, this is good. This is good. I've got some momentum going. Ray, the heat is on. Give us your point number two.
Point, and I actually think based on the point number ones, because I do like to ramp it up, and I think that's the best that James has. So I would agree that I think Beast did take point round number one by maybe a point. But of course, I'm going to win. I sandbag, guys. That's what I do. And let's go ahead and tell you why. Point number two. Point number two, I'm going to talk about the strength feats of Serpentor, as well as some of the amazing things that he's done. I mentioned before that he was born and immediately walking out with just a bedsheet on, he beat up Sergeant Slaughter. He one-shotted him across the room. He basically, Sergeant Slaughter rushed at him. And Sergeant Slaughter is a mean, very powerful character in G.I. Joe. Serpentor just grabbed Sergeant Slaughter and Ragdoll tossed him against a wall and knocked him out. Sergeant Slaughter doesn't get knocked out unless he gets hit with something real, real devastating. And Serpentor's first offensive move did it. A little bit later on, when Serpentor starts bossing people around, Destro and Dr. Mindbender, both reasonably physical, large men themselves, kind of have a little bit of an issue with the direction that he's going. So he grabs each one either by the throat or by the lapel, I don't remember, and one hand lifts each one of them up off the ground, a good foot off the ground, and throws both of them across the room as well. He just throws them across a large room. It was fantastic. On top of that, he backhands Cobra Commander and flings him against a wall as well. He does a lot of hitting people across the room in this first appearance. And I'll be straight, I am here for it. In a different episode, the My Favorite Things episode I mentioned earlier, there's a couple of Cobra soldiers who are attempting to lift a 10-foot gold statue of Genghis Khan and carry it across a room. And they're having a lot of trouble with it. They're just not. So what does Serpentor do? You want to talk about strength feats? He walks up to a 10-foot large statue of Genghis Khan and just picks it up himself and says, if you guys are so incompetent and can't do it, I'll just do it myself. So he picks up this 10. Now, I don't know how heavy one of those things is, but it has to be somewhere in the multi-ton category, I would figure. He picks it up and moves it across the room with a little bit of effort, but nothing that he's really straining himself over. It was fantastic. Let's talk a little bit about some of the weaponry as well, because Beast is often a hand-to-hand fighter. I don't usually see Beast carrying weapons of any kind. Serpentor, on the other hand, is known to shoot guns. He's got all kinds of the Cobra laser pistols that he's constantly using in battles whenever he feels like he needs to. But the other great weapon he brings to the table are the two snakes that are adorned the sides of his neck. Because what he established that he could do in G.I. Joe the movie is he pulls one of the snakes out from behind, which we assumed this whole time were ornamental. It turns out they were real snakes. They go rigid like a spear, and he's able to throw the snake with precision accuracy. And in G.I. Joe the movie, spoiler alert, he hits G.I. Joe leader Duke in the heart with the snake, causing him to die. They try to pretend like he went into a coma at the end of the movie. Kids, we know better. That dude is dead. And that's fine by me. So he has the ability to throw these snakes, which are living organisms, and take out his target that way. Not even to mention the fact that in G.I. Joe the movie, Cobra Law is an entire force. The group that kind of sponsors Serpentor is an entire force of genetic biomechanical creatures of the bug variety that he has access to this whole host of weapons as well. Now, he doesn't use those as often, so I'm not going to lean on that so heavily, but just understand he probably has some sort of bioterroristic beetle thing that he can throw at Beast whenever he needs to and make Beast deal with that while Serpentor's rushing up on him and punching him through a wall. This is all 100% on the table. So when it comes to the great gold Adonis that is Serpentor versus blue Wreck-It Ralph, I'm sorry, I've got to go with Serpentor, and that's my point number two.
You know, I'm actually going to go to Tyler as the esteemed judge. I'd like to call for an instant disqualification of Ray. on the grounds that he said that he's fine by the fact that Duke is now dead. That is sacrilegious. That is hurtful.
As someone that is not familiar with the G.I. Joe, I will allow it.
Okay, thank you. Well, to be fair, in the original incarnation of the script, to give you guys a little history lesson, in the original incarnation of the script, G.I. Joe the movie was supposed to come first before Transformers the movie, My Little Pony movie, all in that same year. They originally had the idea, let's kill Duke. Major character of G.I. Joe, huge presence on the show, and we're going to kill him. The Transformers folks saw that and went, oh, that's a great idea. Let's kill Optimus Prime and put our movie out first. So now it looks like G.I. Joe ripped us off. So what ended up happening was they had to change the thing, even though they'd already kind of made it. So there's a line that just gets thrown in at the very end of the movie where people are mourning Duke. And so one guy just kind of pokes his head in and goes, I just got word from the hospital. Duke's going to be okay. And it's like, stop it. No, he's not. He took a snake to the heart that ate his heart. He is not going to be okay.
I'm not putting down the fact that Duke was supposed to die, which I thought, you know, I believe he's alive and happy somewhere. I'm just not cool that you were good with it. That's what bothers me, is that you were like, and that's fine by me, that Duke. I'm not going to let this go. You know, one last thing I'm going to say, you know, Serpentor has absolutely, he's got stuff we don't even know about, obviously, you know, these, and he plays a long game. Like, these snakes had to stay still for 2 years before they were allowed to move. I mean, these are well-trained snakes.
Very well.
What else does this guy have? That's what I'm trying to figure out. But here's the deal. Beast has to fight opponents with weird appendages, guns, mutants large and small, giant sentinel robot. I mean, Beast has seen it all. Who in the G.I. Joe world outside of Cobra Law, you know, has anything that resembles like a superpower? Oh, yeah, that's right, Sergeant Slaughter. All right, let me get to my point number two, and this will all become clear. Okay, so let's talk about Beast's fighting style. So Beast, he's a genius. And again, I've mentioned this before, he's probably one of the 10 smartest people on Earth in the Marvel Universe. If not top 10, he's definitely top 20. So when he fights, he taps into his intellect and is always playing chess within his mind to better understand his opponent. He's a really fast thinker, and he comes up, you know, the way he's written is really cool. He comes up with plans and tactics on the spot. Now, what separates him and Serpentor would be their varied fighting experience against varied opponents. Now, I know Serpentor can tap into, you know, the DNA and the history of all these people, you know, what Napoleon had to fight, Genghis Khan had to face. But no one who, you know, whose DNA he used to create him ever had to fight, I don't know, Magneto or someone like, you know, Mr. Sinister or Apocalypse or, you know, mutants or anything like that. And this is, again, what's going to say. So because whatever what Serpentor throws at Beast, in some way, shape or form, he's seen it a whole bunch of times, has dealt with it and has overcome it. So let's talk about, you know, who he's fought that kind of will shed some light on all this. So Beast has taken on opponents like Iron Man, Juggernaut, and the Hulk. In other words, Beast has had to fight opponents who are of a much higher weight class power wise than he was. And as a result, Beast had to figure out ways to be more effective against opponents who are much more powerful and indestructible than he was. By the way, when has Serpentor ever had to face someone like the Juggernaut? So what does Beast do in this situation? He figures out not only how to fight better, but also how to hit harder, as in much harder. So here's a really cool thing about Beast. I'm trying to explain this the right way. There was something really cool written about him where, you know, he was in the X-Men's Danger Room, which is like in the Marvel Comics, like the most technologically advanced training room with holographic capabilities, hard light capabilities. It's from an alien race called the Shi'ar who brought all this technology to Earth. And he spent decades training in that Danger Room. So he's got all this really cool training experience. And in that, what he's done is, you know, he's figured out this fighting style where, and again, I'm going to use something that really puzzles Ray. So I'm going to speak very slowly. I'm about to use math. So what happens is when Beast, he's figured out, because he's a scientist, when he's about to hit someone, he accelerates at super speed. So power equals mass times acceleration, right? You can't change your mass, but you can change your rate of acceleration. The faster the acceleration, the more power you're going to have. Beast has figured out how to totally take advantage of his ability to accelerate at super speed. Again, that's 400 pounds of super strength flying through the air that can be accelerated over a short distance. He hits way harder than what he looks like he can hit. And he already looks like he can hit really, really hard. So you got to remember, you know, he's fought and taken shots and hit and hurt people like Magneto, Magneto, sorry. He's heard Apocalypse, the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. He's bashed in these giant King Kong-sized robots called Sentinels that are designed to take out mutants. You know, so with his own unique fighting style, his agility and all of his superpowers, as well as his experience, his breadth of experience of taking on the Juggernaut, Iron Man, any host of mutants, never mind understanding how Wolverine works. Like, I just don't think Serpentor has anything that's going to surprise Beast, or at the very least has anything that Beast can't figure out how to overcome very quickly. That's my point number two.
And fantastic. No, Beast is a physical marvel without question, and he can do some things. Now, again, the fact that Beast is going to be coming in with no weapons of any kind versus a character like Serpentor, who's going to have plenty of weapons and the know-how to use them and the tactics, is good as well. I could also point out that Beast goes into combat. What kind of armor does Beast typically wear when he goes into combat, James?
He has a 400-pound, very durable body that allows him to take falls from 5 stories up and to get hit by the Juggernaut and Hulk and still be kind of okay.
Yeah. Stone Cold Steve Austin wears better armor with that vest than Beast does, generally speaking, in combat. Okay. Serpentor is decked out in a gold clad, very, very strong armor, as well as a cowl of a little snake head and a cape behind him as well that he could use for a variety of kind of Bruce Lee style maneuvers as well, if he would like to. So one of the characters is coming in with a lot of weapons, fully armored, and the strength and power to maneuver in that armor very, very quickly. He's surprisingly nimble if you watch him fight in combat. You have Beast, on the other hand, who's coming in with no weapons and no armor whatsoever, and he's going to rely on his very powerful skin to block anything that Serpentor is going to throw at him. And, you know, Serpentor's got fangs sticking out of both of his gloves, you know, and so who's to say there's not venom in there or something? So if he gets a shot in on Beast and just lands one punch that's only going to hit skin, I have to believe Serpentor's looking pretty good in the fight, given all of the factors that I just said.
All right, so let me answer those real quick. Number one, Beast has retractable claws, and he also has fangs himself. Point number two, he's got this something going on with his metabolism where poisons and toxins and that kind of stuff don't really affect him that much, right? And then point number three, you keep talking about Serpentor's costume, his robes, that really cool cobra head thing going on. Is this something that you would wear out in public if I got it for you?
100% yes.
Mental note made. All right, we're now at the turning point.
Can I say one thing real quick before we get to the turning point, James?
Sure.
There was one point in Beast's favor that I wanted to put on the record that I saw, because there was one point he was in a fight against this alleged Omega Super Mutant Iceman, who's total trash, and Iceman one froze him entirely solid. He froze Beast solid with his Omega level of power, and Beast got a cold and broke out of it. And, well, on paper, yeah, I guess that's supposed to be like a strong, like, endurance feat for Beast. Doesn't it just show more what trash Iceman is, really? If you think about it, like, the fact that a naked guy, he froze solid and couldn't even put him down for the count. Let's face it, Iceman, Omega level, I don't think so. I just, you know, I saw it. It occurred to me. I wanted to say it. And here I am giving props to Beast. But also, Iceman is pure garbage, and I wanted to put that on the record. Thank you.
Okay, so you're just talking about the pure skin, like that Beast only has skin, and now you're talking about the nakedness of Iceman. And by the way, I'm pretty sure at the very least he has shorts and boots. So it's not a complete, it's a risque outfit. I'm not going to lie to you, it's risque, but he's wearing something. By the way, he controls all of ice to the, but I don't want to get into this. He's a mega level. We'll talk more about this right later.
He's a trash tier mutant. Keep going. I'm sorry. I'm getting in the way of the show. Please go on to the turning point.
Okay. Thank you, Ray. Okay. So Tyler, we're at the turning point. This is where you tell us who you think is ahead and what the other side has to do to pull out the win.
You know, I've got to say right now, I know that the last time I was on the show, you know, it was a controversial decision. And so as loath as I am to give Ray a point, I feel like Serpentor has really kind of pulled into the lead right now. And here's why. I feel like, number one, the armor and the weaponry was a great point. But also one thing that kept recurring in my head is that I feel like, and again, as someone that doesn't have a huge familiarity with either character, I've got to think that Serpentor is more accustomed to fighting solo than Beast is. I feel like a lot of Beast's victories might have been in conjunction with his fellow X-Men. And so in a clean one-on-one fight with with Beast and his skin and his fur and his fangs and his claws versus Serpentor and his arsenal, I've got to currently give it to Serpentor.
Yeah, I agree completely. And actually, you know, apparently I don't need to make my point number three section where I was going to talk about how Beast always fights in a team and Serpentor often fights solo. But I mean, here's the deal. It was coming up either way.
If I may, Tyler, you're saying that if you see some evidence of really great notable wins, for example, that Beast has solo wins, that this could sway you to thinking otherwise.
I will concede that that's a possibility depending on who the victory is over.
Very cool. All right. I think I know what I have to do. Ray, it's all going to come down to this. Hit us with your point number three.
Point number three. First off, I want to talk about some of the things that Beast has going against him, and then some of the things, the biggest thing in my mind that Serpentor has going for him that tips this balance in his favor in this battle. First off, Beast. Now, as said before, Beast, he often fights with a team. He's a member of the X-Men. He very rarely fights one-on-one. You know, you notice how you hear James earlier. It's what James doesn't say. It's often very important. He says, oh, he fought Juggernaut. He fought the Hulk. He fought Mr. Sinister. You notice how James doesn't say he beat the Hulk. He beat Mr. Sinister. He didn't beat these characters. He just fought them. And if just fighting people is what it is, then there are 40 people who fought Mike Tyson, who I guess we should assume are as good as Mike Tyson, even though he knocked them all out in 3 minutes. I'm just saying, fighting somebody and beating somebody are not exactly the same thing. And again, Beast fights in a team. He's really the guy who kind of sits back and helps direct people. He doesn't always get into it. Serpentor, yes, he also will sit back and direct people, but he's a guy who's the tip of the spear, who will go into where the area is most dangerous and lead and inspire by getting in the middle of it and wrecking fools. That's what he does. But let's talk a little bit also about how Beast has gone feral before. This is an important thing, and this is why Beast holds back a lot of his powers, is because in the comic books, Beast has gone into a feral mode where he sort of lost himself, lost his mind, gave in to the animal within. And it's a storyline with Beast where he, once they were able to pull him back using a little hypnotherapy and kind of, I'm sure, sedatives and what have you, were able to bring him back down under control. It's a place he did not want to go again if he could help it. Therefore, Beast is not the guy who's going to go all out in this battle. I wanted to reiterate this point. But the big thing that gives Serpentor the edge over everybody is his air chariot. Serpentor flies around in a mechanical air chariot that has two 762 millimeter
guns.
Yes.
Wait. Okay, hold on. We're talking about a random encounter.
We would normally
characters.
Wait for a counterpoint for this, James. Why are you cutting me off? What's happening right now?
Okay. I'm going back to the judge, Tyler. You know, you're saying this Serpentor has a vehicle on him. That's like, you know, in our Mad Max episode, you tried to say, oh, Mad Max car. He has his car, his supercharger car, which will help him run over Rick Grimes. That was anyway. Not included. That was not included. Okay, wait. Tyler. Well, no. Okay, your point, Ray. Let's see what it is.
I'm going to tell you right now, Tyler, here's the deal. And if you tell me after I say this point if I'm right or wrong, okay? Serpentor is seen flying in his chariot in almost every single battle that he's a part of. He's always got it either in the room with him or he comes into battle riding it. But on top of everything else, when you bought the toy of Serpentor from Hasbro in the G.I. Joe line, Serpentor came lumped in with the air chariot in the same box together. Literally, him and the chariot are so inseparable, they are not sold separately. So the fact that he's always using it in battles all the time, combined with the fact that you could not buy them separate from each other, I have to believe, and Tyler, I'm going to need some backup here before I continue this point, I have to believe that's okay and is usable in this battle.
I mean, I've got to think, you know, if it's reasonable to assume that he has command over it and he's able to summon it, and if there's no reason for us to think that it's otherwise incapacitated, I don't see a reason that it shouldn't be allowed.
What is happening here? What is it? Okay, when Serpentor was born, was he born with an air chariot? No, he didn't even have that weird blanket.
He was. He had it. No, they had his costume and the air chariot literally in that same room where he was born. And after he beat up Sergeant Slaughter and gave his speech, he put it on and got on board.
Wait, so he wasn't birthed when he was, if that's the right word, birthed into the world, and out of the womb came Serpentor and the air chariot and his costume. He came out
all
like
of the above.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
He was 2 minutes alive, and he had the he was on the air chariot. So I'm sorry, this is legit, and our judge has already ruled, James. So if I may be allowed to continue, rude.
I'll allow
it. Thank you. He has a very maneuverable air chariot, which means he can fly around and zoop, and it can move left, right, center, all of the above. It doesn't move like a traditional aircraft would. It's a lot more maneuverable. As it is, so it has 762 millimeter strike attack guns, which all Serpentor has to do in this battle is fly around above Beast, who, check me out here, I don't think Beast knows how to fly, unless I'm horribly mistaken, and Serpentor can just fly around the battlefield, doesn't even need to let Beast get close to him, flies around, shoots him down, and if Beast doesn't just get hit and is defeated right there, Beast is going to have to run away, because he has no way to defeat Serpentor on his air chariot. And that is my point number three.
Unbelievable. Okay. So, all right. Out of respect to the judge and the fact that Serpentor still, you know, one-shotted Sergeant Slaughter unconscious minutes after being born, let's just keep going with this, right? Because, you know, I don't want to take it away from Serpentor. Let's just, you know what? Let's let it stand. Let's see what happens. Okay. All right. I've got nothing actually to go against that. Although yeah, I do
that's
have a
because
lot
of- I'm completely right and justified, and you know it. So there is no defense, because that itself would be indefensible.
You know what my mind's already going through right now? I'm like, okay, cool. For future battles, we have now set a very interesting precedent. So I'm cool with this. All right. Let me talk about my point number three. Let's talk about notable wins, right? Now, Tyler, you mentioned that you needed to see some one-on-one evidence to help you turn the corner with this. Okay. So, okay, let's face it. Serpentor is a really powerful opponent. I mean, again, stood toe-to-toe with Sergeant Slaughter and knocked him silly across the room. And there's levels of superhuman opponents and then there are levels. And by the way, Ray, quick question. How superhumanly strong is Sergeant Slaughter? Like, how many tons could he press? I mean, I'm assuming he's stronger than Captain America, right?
I honestly was going to say, I would put him at around Captain America's strength, at least MCU Captain America. I think that's a very fair thing. He might be a little bit stronger than MCU Captain America, maybe under where he's at the comic books right now.
Yeah, and again, I we were talking before the show. I have so much respect for Sergeant Slaughter and his finishing move, the Cobra Clutch, that I've actually, you know, taken a variation of it, and I do call it the Cobra Clutch, and we actually have it as part of our Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu curriculum at my MMA school, Max Impact, in west side of Los Angeles, hopefully open soon. Okay, let's take a look at who Beast has taken on and actually beaten in a fight. Let's go ahead. Okay, there's Kraven the Hunter. Now, Kraven's kind of got a similar strength level, I would say, to both Beast and definitely to Serpentor. So during a prolonged fight, Beast is being hunted by Kraven after Kraven actually successfully hits him with some type of super poison that overcame Beast. Now, Kraven, being an expert fighter and combatant, did well against Beast up until Beast starts to get pissed off. At that point, Kraven gets so overtaken and surprised by Beast's ferocity, rage, and power that he yells for help from the X-Men to stop from getting killed by Beast's counterattack. So Beast can go there when he needs to, if it's the right opponent. Now, here's another interesting fight. It was Beast versus Iron Man in their first ever encounter. It was another fight that took place early on in Beast's career where he was new to his furry blue form. So Iron Man and Beast are battling it out, each getting good hits on the other. Like most first encounters that end up in fights, this is another one of those situations where the two misunderstood each other. So as the fight progresses, both Beast and Iron Man are going back and forth. But at the end of it, Iron Man gets knocked down and gets pummeled by Beast and is left on the ground. Beast safely walks away. That's a win for Beast. Another brief encounters with Wolverine, they've actually got a tie. The ones where Wolverine and Beast actually decide to engage in a fight, the battle ended up in a draw where both Beast and Wolverine were able to hurt each other. And again, that's Wolverine. You can't get more ferocious than that. In another battle, he takes on and defeats the Juggernaut. Now, the way he did it was by taking a full-on punch by Juggernaut, somehow surviving it, and then having a subsequent fall headfirst onto rocks about two stories directly below him, which also shows just how tough and durable Beast is. So the Juggernaut decides to finish him off, jumps down to continue the fight, but Beast realized that the dirt that the Juggernaut was going to jump onto would be unable to take his weight. So the rocks crumble, and that caused Juggernaut to fall and desperately cling onto a cliff, which for some reason he couldn't pull himself back up. This allows Beast just to climb up, talk to him for a little bit, postulate, and then take his time to walk away, which, by the way, counts as a win in the who would win kind of world of battles. The questions you have to ask yourself is, how would Serpentor do against opponents like Kraven the Hunter, Wolverine, Iron Man, and Juggernaut? Could he beat them? Could Serpentor even last a few minutes against them? Maybe against Kraven, maybe against Wolverine, Iron Man, and Juggernaut? Absolutely not. So You know, B's style of fighting, by the way, is one made up of thought, logic, and observation. He thinks things through and comes up with a strategy. He's done that so many times. And Serpentor, again, remember I mentioned point number one, he's got this weakness bred into him because, again, he didn't receive the DNA from Sun Tzu. So now he lacks the patience to think things through and he just runs into a battle. Remember, the DNA that makes up Serpentor, these are all amazing military leaders. Some were even kind of would fight with the troops, but none of them had substantial wins on their own against, you know, a huge military force or against a superpowered opponent. Just keep that in mind. Let me just kind of sum this all up with his super strength, super speed and agility, super durability, his genius level IQ, his unique and scientifically developed fighting style that enables Beast to hit way harder than Serpentor ever could, and his record of wins over super powerful and super skilled opponents. Again, like Iron Man and the Juggernaut, there's no way that Beast loses this fight, despite that really weird air chariot thing he's got riding around. And that is my point number three.
Okay, now hold on a second, because you said that he beat Iron Man early on in his career. Was that early on in his Marvel 616 career? Because you
that
said
is
he was
correct.
New to Blue Fur. So he fought
That's
him in
correct.
The 616 universe.
This was a battle that took place in the not-so-distant early 70s.
And the early 70s is the 616 current edition of the characters. Am I getting this
correct?
That is correct. 1970s.
Up until today, yes.
Yeah, okay. So here's the deal that I would say about a lot of that nonsense. I would think Serpentor would stand up very, very well to a lot of those characters. I think one-on-one against the Juggernaut, I don't think Juggernaut would fight him. If they did get into a fight, I think Serpentor would figure out a way. Look, if every other character Juggernaut's ever fought found out a way to outsmart the Juggernaut, I have to believe a great military strategist would also find a way to beat him. It wouldn't be standing toe-to-toe and trade punches, I can promise you that. But the big thing that I want to talk about here is how I see this battle going down. Because I see this battle starting with two people in front of each other, and I see Beast trying to talk Serpentor out of the fight to begin with, because he doesn't want this bad item on his resume, as the case may be. And Serpentor is just going to just grab him and throw him and start punching him repeatedly. And Beast is going to get taken back, say, okay, I'm going to need to fight this guy. Cool. He's going to fight back a little bit, maybe ramp up the aggression slightly, but not too much, because he does tamper it down. He's going to land one good shot on Serpentor, maybe like a good forearm in the chest or a kick to the side or a headbutt of some kind. He's going to hit him somewhere. Serpentor's going to say, wow, that really would have hurt me if I wasn't a superhuman. So Serpentor then will say, okay, I'm not going to fight this guy one-on-one. I'm too smart for that. He's going to get on his air chariot. He's going to fly around the arena, shooting down at Beast, who's going to be forced to rout from the scene because there is nothing he can do against that level of firepower coming from a flying genius opponent. That is how I see this battle going. I'm ready to go to the judgment.
Hold on. So you're saying, let's go to the judge in 1 second. You're saying that Beast will employ the ever popular William Shatner, Captain Kirk methods of fighting against Serpentor. He'll use a judo chop, which is not really a thing, a forearm smash, or a kick to the midsection or to the side. Someone with claws and fangs and someone who trains with Wolverine will use... Okay.
He will use blunt force attacks, because I've done a lot of research on Beast over the last week. And I can honestly say yes, because that's the acrobatic kicky stuff that I've seen him do in the comics.
That's it's so funny. That's exactly how people describe Beast, is that he does acrobatic kicky stuff. All right, Tyler, you've heard both sides of this debate. You've heard some interesting points from Ray, where he brings in toys to prove his points and how they're packaged. You've heard points from me. You've heard points from me. This is the time where you actually have to give us your decision. Tell us your process. Who actually won this fight between Beast and Serpentor?
Like I said before, this was an extremely tough battle to call. With as good as you both are at your counter arguments, I will say coming into this, I had a little bit of bias towards Beast. You know, having that healing factor, even though it may not be Wolverine level, I thought that might give him the edge, and I thought that being a genius level intellect along with kind of a modern edge, I thought would would give him the edge. You know, it feels like he's a modern genius as opposed to a historical genius like Serpentor might be. All of that being said, I hate to say it. I hate to say it because I don't know the ramifications that this precedent might set, but I've got to think that the Air Chariot is, once again, as you said, pardon the pun, the X factor. I feel like with it being a flying vehicle, with it having those kind of guns, I feel like there's no way that Beast can stand up to that. I feel like even with Beast's superhuman level of endurance, he's still using his body in 100% of the fight while Serpentor is zipping around, letting his muscles heal, getting that wind back while raining down death from above. So I've got to say, you guys put forth excellent, excellent arguments, but I've got to give this fight to Rey and Serpentor.
What are you talking about?
Thank you very much. Thank you. I deserve it.
What? You're saying due to a packaging decision from Hasbro, Rey wins this fight.
Let me tell you right now, not only did the basic Serpentor come packed in with the Eric Chariot, they did a Rise Serpentor Arise kind of mini set that came with the DVD of the show itself and another character for him to fight. It was, it was one of the guys inside the vehicles, and I'm completely blanking on it right now. But Serpentor also came with the Air Chariot in that set as well. So peanut butter and jelly, these two things just go together and they achieve victory.
Rey, quick question. Are you remembering what these toys came with, or are you looking at a package right now that you got on eBay of Serpentor and his flying chariot?
eBay, please. I had this stuff back in 1987, sir.
I'm not sure if this makes me lose respect for you or makes me like you that much more. All right, here's where I'm at. I'm not losing my mind over this, although I do think it's whatever. I got to tell you, Serpentor, I'm just going to go back to it. This guy beat Sergeant Slaughter. I don't even know what that means other than it's Sergeant Slaughter. And it's the superhero version of Sergeant Slaughter. So I'm not that I think it's a Rey. It's a hashtag typical Rey victory. I'm not going to say it's not. But I got to tell you, I have so much respect for Serpentor. I'm not horribly upset with this decision. So with that being said, horribly upset with Tyler, though. All right. All that being said, congratulations, Rey. I really did like your arguments, and I think you did represent Serpentor, a character who I really, really like. You represented him really, really well. I thought that was fantastic. And Tyler, again, in all seriousness, great job with judging. This was a really, really fun fight. Thank you so much for doing the show. Please tell everyone where they can find you.
Yeah, absolutely. And just real quick, just thank you guys very, very much. This podcast, I always get nervous coming on it, but it's because you guys both put forth such incredible arguments that it gets so hard to decide each fight. So thank you very much for having me again. Where people can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at Ty Matthews PMA. They can find my sketch team at Friendo Sketch. We are currently still putting out content, even given the circumstances. So look out for more from there. And also a Jacked Wrestling Comedy, which I'm hoping will be putting forth content here in the very near future, before we can return to the Pack Theater.
I love it. Okay. Rey, again, congratulations to you. It was a well-fought, well-earned victory. And, anytime you can rep a character from G.I. Joe, the iconic series, my hat is off to you. So with that being said, please tell our listeners where they can find you.
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Almighty Rey. Let's bask in my victory. Hashtag winning streak. Hashtag Rey is right. Hashtag arise Serpentor arise. Hashtag to victory. And let's just celebrate me, because I really am great. I'm not going to lie. I came into this episode saying if I lose this and go 1-2 below 500 with G.I. Joe characters on this show, it would be a pure embarrassment, an absolute travesty of justice. You know, I already lost the RoboCop battle. So if I lose the G.I. Joe battle too, like my identity will be gone. So, Tyler, I just want to say, first off, you made the right call. I won't thank you because you did the right thing, but I will say, great job. We may have you back someday.
I'm glad I was able to make up for the Supergirl and Vegeta decision.
I
Well, you're still working your way towards that.
Yeah, I don't know if you have, Tyler. I don't know if you have, but that's okay. You can find me posing my patented question of the day on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at James Gavsey. Remember to join the official Who Would Win Facebook group to make a suggestion for a matchup for the show and to be part of our growing community. You can also find us on Instagram at Who Would Win Show. And don't forget to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and on YouTube, and wherever else you go for your podcast. And check out the Who Would Win website at www.whowouldwinshow.com to access all of our past podcast episodes. On behalf of myself, Ray Stikanis, and the rest of the amazing Who Would Win team, thank you once again for listening to another episode of Who Would Win. We'll see you next time.